It's Life and Taxes on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. Joining us, of course, from Harvell & Collins, Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins, a law firm in Morehead City. The number, if you'd like to join him, 252-726-9050. And I say join them for any kind of business activities, 726-9050. Or you can go online to learn more about the law firm and all the services at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. And with that introduction, Andrew, good afternoon. Life and Taxes.
Good afternoon, Lockwood.
So, you know, as we are approaching the end of the year, I'm sure there are probably some items that you'd suggest for our audience, or what are you thinking?
Yeah, no doubt about it, Lockwood. So as we get close to the end of 2023, we need to take into account the fact that most individuals, well, all individuals, are calendar year taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that the reality is we need to get things done in this calendar year in order for them to make any difference relative to our tax return that we'll file in 2024.
Right.
So you're under a deadline, and there are some things that extend into, you know, April of 2024, but most things end with December 31st. And as we know, it feels like the end of the year is going to be here before we know it, the way this year is going so far. So time is of the essence to get these things done. And what I like to do when we're coming towards the end of the year is first look and see, is there any pending legislation, you know, that could affect your taxes going into next year? A lot of times what's happening, Lockwood, at the end of the year is Congress is horse trading a bit, and, you know, there's a possibility that things could get passed. And the way that Congress does typical tax legislation is they pass those bills retroactive to the beginning of the year. Okay. So what that means is that even though we've gone through 11 or 12 months of 2023, Congress has the ability to say, we're passing a law, and oh, by the way, it's effective, you know, as if we had passed it as of January 1st, 2023. Mm-hmm. And right now, we know how Congress is. they've got their issues. And clearly, the possible government shutdown, you know, issues, continuing resolutions, you know, it's not looking great for any type of what we call tax extenders or any type of legislation to get passed before the end of the year that's going to make a true difference, you know, for your taxes for 2023. But that being said, there are some things that you could see or could hear about. You know, one could be the child tax credit. So this is one where, you know, in the past, Lockwood, we had that enhanced child tax credit. You know, we talked about that at length on this show, mm-hmm. how money was being paid out for half a year, you know, upfront money that then was reconciled on your tax return. And then, of course, last year, it went right back to the old child tax credit rules. But the Congress is pushing for potentially to do the child tax credit. That's on the Democrat side. They're pushing for that. And then on the Republican side, they're looking for some interest providing relief on Section 163J limit on interest deductions, as well as reinstating some bonus depreciation. So, you know, could there be a potential for a deal to be worked out where, you know, you could take advantage of the child tax credit and there'd be some business relief relative to, you know, entities that are out there to be determined. But I just wanted to say the moral of the story and the take-home point is that it does not look like we're likely headed towards any meaningful tax legislation at the end of the year. So not much to likely affect your 2023 end-of-year filing.
Andrew, real quick question for you on that one. If Congress should, in January or February, make some changes, could they be retroactive to the previous year?
Yes. That's okay. A good question, Lockwood. So that has been done in the past, where they don't quite get it finished in December, uh-huh. and they go ahead and table it over to January, and then, you know, boom, they pass it first, second, third week of January, and it actually does affect 2023.
So I remember previous conversations in previous years and talking with you, and of course we're talking with Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins. Life and taxes is the topic of conversation today. You've talked about this in the past that you mentioned tax extenders or the opportunity for new laws coming into effect that would have retroactive impact on those taxes. So this year, though, based on your, if you will, reading of the tea leaves, we shouldn't expect a great deal. There are possibilities, as you just mentioned, of the extension of the child tax credit or expansion of it, and the possibility of providing limited benefits for those were related to payments, interest payments, and you said, interestingly enough, bonus payments as well. But at
Correct.
This point, what you're telling me, I'm hearing, unless you have some other activity, other observations here, right now we can pretty much predict what we should be thinking about how we plan our tax year this year based on the current law.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so it's one of those things. There's not going to be likely legislation passed that's going to have a meaningful effect that you can take advantage of. So the rules are set, Lockwood, is kind of the best way to say it at this point in time. More than likely, barring some, midnight deal and getting made. So you know what that leads us to, Lockwood, is our standard. Let's look at the laws that are in place, and then what can we do at this point in time to take advantage of the year end. And one of the things that we always come to at the year end, and it is the season of giving, so we talk about gifting, and I think that's a good strategy, to talk about at the end of the year. And one of the reasons that we harp on gifting is because we're in a very favorable, gifting environment as it stands. And the reason I say that is because there are two, if you don't want to pay taxes on making a gift, and remember what happens, Lockwood, relative to this. The person that actually gives the money is the one that is susceptible to the taxes.
Right.
And the reason for that is because the person that receives that gift, it is actually omitted from income.
Okay.
Specifically omitted from income. So if you receive a gift, you go ahead and stroke me a check, Lockwood. I go ahead and deposit in my bank account. Then you have to bear the burden of any taxes associated with that because you gave that to me, and it is not gross income for me. Mm-hmm. All right?
All right.
So there's two indexes that we look at when we talk about gifting, and the first is the estate tax environment. And the reason for that is because the gift tax and the estate tax exemption are indexed together.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're the same amount. And right now in 2023, we have a $12.92 million gift and estate tax exemption. And what that means is that during the course of your life, you're able to give someone up to $12.92 million and not pay any taxes on that. You will be required to file gift tax returns to report those gifts, but the good news is for all of our listeners out there, you can make those gifts and you have up to $12.92 million that will be tax-free making those gifts.
Wow.
So yeah, big number there, that you can take advantage of if you're interested in giving some of your wealth away.
Mm-hmm.
The other real meaningful one for calendar year, end of year planning is the annual exclusion amount. And what this is the amount that you can actually give someone without paying taxes and without having to file a gift tax return or use any of your lifetime exemption amount. So you're not using any of that $12.92 million because of the annual exclusion. So right now, Lockwood, that amount is $17,000. So get your checkbook ready because you can go ahead and write me that check for $17,000, and guess what?
No, and I don't have
guess
to.
What?
I don't have to find. I'd have to do no paperwork involved. I stroke that check, and I don't have to worry about it at all. In other words,
that's right. You're exactly right. So you stroke me that check for $17,000. You don't have to. Number one, file a gift tax return.
Okay.
Number two, you don't have to pay taxes on that. Obviously. Number three, you're not using any of your lifetime exemption amount for estate taxes and gift taxes. And number four, it's tax free to me.
Wow.
So that's a really good planning tool there potentially to divest yourself of some of the wealth pass it down to the next generation or whomever you may want to. And, you know, use that at the end of the year, because if you don't use it, you lose it.
Okay.
You cannot carry over an annual exclusion from, you know, 2023 to 2024. It's just it's available in the calendar year, and if you fail to use it, you just fail to use it.
Okay.
The one thing I'll tell you, what we see a lot with our clients is they're interested in giving, and then they come to me and go, yeah, but Andrew, my amount that I'm giving is a little bit more than 17.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe they're gifting a car.
Right.
Maybe they're gifting, you know, some stock or some LLC interest that they have in a business. And the CPA is valued at a greater than $17,000. You know, a couple strategies that can be used on that. If you're married, you can actually gift split. That's what it's called, meaning that you and your spouse can file a gift tax return, and then even though you're gifting the amount that's over, because you elect a gift split, you double your annual exclusion. So
okay.
You get, you know, so even though it's coming from me, Lockwood, I give you $34,000, which is 17 plus 17.
Mm-hmm.
I file the gift tax return, and even though it was Andrew Foster that gave it to you, you know, my wife Ashley can be deemed to have given you half of that gift, and
okay.
Therefore it would be completely tax-free and not use any of the exemption amount. So that's one way to do it. The other way to do it is stagger it. So, you know, because we're at the end of the year, it's a great time to plan to say, okay, well, this year, Lockwood, I'm going to give you 17. Because I'm able to do that under the annual exclusion amount, and then you flip around to 2024, and you can do $18,000. And why can you do $18,000 in 2024? Because guess what?
Inflation.
The annual exclusion amount is indexed for inflation.
Inflation. All right.
And we're moving on up as far as that goes. So, you know, you're able to give basically $35,000 to someone. And I keep saying dollars. There's other
right.
things you can gift as well. We mentioned cars. We mentioned stock. We mentioned, you know, lots of things that can be given. But, yeah, value. That's the key there. But, you know, that's one easy way to kind of plan these gifts is to say, look, if it's over 17, well, let's just do part of it in 23 and let's do part of it in 24. So,
yeah.
You know, those are good strategies that are out there that I think are really solid year-end planning strategies. You do need to be aware of tax basis. We've talked about that in the past. So, you know, if you're giving something that has a large built-in gain, you know, meaning that if you have a stock that you bought at a really low value and you're, you're giving that actual stock to an individual, be wary, because what you've done is just given them your tax basis in that stock. We call it carryover basis, and meaning if they turn around and sell that stock, you know, they're going to have a pretty large capital
right.
gain to pay because your basis is their basis is the way that it works. So just be wary of gifting, you know, built in gain assets, and also be wary of giving built in loss assets because you cannot pass along a loss. So that's very important, Lockwood. That's one of the code provisions, which says that if you have a stock that you bought at a really high value, and now it's trading at a very low value, and you say, hey, look, I'm going to go ahead and give that stock. I'm giving this stock to Lockwood. It's a dog,
right.
But you know, I'm going to go ahead and give him and actually give you the shares. Well, the problem is I just gave you the shares, and then your basis ends up being the current value of that stock because I'm not allowed to give you my loss.
Okay.
The better strategy there is for me to sell that stock, recognize that loss,
right.
And then give you the money associated with it. So you didn't waste the ability to take, you know, to claim that loss on your taxes. So the policy behind that is they don't want people, you know, to be able to give losses to individuals who, you know, truly didn't
earn them,
had that skin in the game, you
right.
know. So that's the policy there. So just FYI, that's always something to look at when you're talking about giving assets, whether appreciated with built-in gains or depreciated with built-in losses. You need to be careful when that's occurring.
We're talking with Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins about strategies for year-end tax planning. And I just want to, real quickly, before we wrap it up, Andrew, just make mention of the fact, call you now, not the end of the month. Call you now, 252 area code 726-9050. Reach out to them. You can also go online to harvellandcollins.com. And as always, Andrew, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Lockwood.
It's Life and Taxes here on the Talk Station. It's Life and Taxes on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins. And again, we've always enjoyed talking to him, especially this time of year as we get into the year-end strategies. We've been talking about that here recently. Again, we're talking with Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins. And if you'd like to reach out to Andrew following this conversation, the number 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. And again, the website, that'll be another way to reach out to them, at harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, Andrew, we've been talking about year-end strategies, and we recently were talking about the topic of gifting and things of this nature. Last week, we talked about one item I want to real quick quiz you on very quickly, and that was the annual exclusion. And you mentioned that amount this year is $17,000. It rises next year because of inflation. Thank you very much for inflation, of course, but I say that tongue-in-cheek. But the $17,000 exclusion that we talked about last week, I'm curious, is that $17,000 total or is that $17,000 per gift?
That is $17,000 per gift, Lockwood.
Okay.
So you can give me $17,000, you can give my wife $17,000,
okay,
my two daughters $17,000, and okay, guess what? You've been able to use those exclusions. And again, what we talked about last week with the annual exclusion is that it is per calendar year. Uh-huh. So that's very important for our listeners to understand is a use it or lose it, you know, mentality. And also, it is per gift, as you very well just said, which means that it's per individual, not a cumulative total that you add up to 17.
Okay.
So very important there. And remember, what an annual exclusion means, Lockwood, is that it's going to be non-taxable to the giver.
Mm-hmm.
By the giver, it's going to be non-reportable, meaning you don't have to file a gift tax return. And it does not eat away any of your lifetime exemption amount for estate tax purposes.
Okay.
So therefore, you know, very, very, very nice annual amount and very fitting as a year-end tax planning tool because it is calendar year-based.
Okay. So, all right, we've talked about the gifting aspect. Any other activities associated with year-end strategies for tax planning?
Yeah, just to go back and kind of recap, I like where you started, Lockwood, with a recap of the last show. You know, just wanted to say that we talked about that we do not believe there's going to be any tax extenders that are mm-hmm. likely to occur in the year end due to divided government. We mentioned that the calendar year is so critical for individual taxpayers because we're all on that December 31st deadline.
Mm-hmm.
So just want to make it clear to our listeners, you know, the time to plan is now. You know, here we are getting towards the end of the year, and you don't want to be waiting till December 29th, December 28th,
right,
you know, to put these strategies into effect. You really need to be thinking about them right now in order to take advantage of them. And, you know, it's just really critical. This year-end deadline is firm and fast.
Okay.
You know, you can't creep into the next year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we mentioned before about tax cases that hinge on when that check was deposited.
Right.
You know, when those issues do arise, so it's so critical because if you wait too long, you know, you can think you're doing the right thing and end up in a very bad situation.
So
because because things carry over to the next year, and boom, you're stuck with reporting that in 24 when you had all intentions of making sure that it affected your 23 taxes.
Okay, real quick question, because I do recall a conversation on this topic. If I send you the check on the 30th or the 31st of December, I put it in the mail and send it to you, but you don't receive it until January 4th or 5th, when does that that gift apply? 23 or 24?
Very good question. So we just had a case that actually went to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals that answered that very question.
Wow.
Which is when does this apply? And what the court, the analysis on it was, is that because the individual who makes the gift, all right, so we're going to say Lockwood's gifting in this regard. He's going to gift over to me, Andrew. And Lockwood writes that check, puts it in the mail December 31st, and it's in the mail, in transit to me, and I get it in the next year, and I deposit it promptly. Because Lockwood had the ability to stop payment on that check. Now, he didn't do it, but he had the ability to do it.
Okay.
That is an incomplete gift. It's not completed yet. So therefore, you know, you're trying to meet the elements of gifting.
Right.
You've done everything you can. My relative lives out of state. I don't have a choice. I got to just get him the check this way. This is the best I can do. I waited too long. I waited till the 31st. It's going to be okay. It's dated the 31st. No big deal.
Right.
Well, the tax court case came down and said if that check was not deposited in that calendar year, then you had the ability to stop payment on it, and therefore it was not a completed gift until that money cleared the bank, which is 2024, and therefore it is going to apply to your 2024 taxes and not your 2023 taxes. So it's so critical, you know, as to the timing deadlines here, because you can have unintended consequences because, you think you're doing everything right, but then you just don't quite get there because – actually has to be deposited.
Right. It's transactional. The transaction has to be completed, in other words, in that calendar year.
That's right.
That's interesting. Exactly right. Okay. I'll brag a little bit. That's the reason why we enjoy the conversations with Andrew, of course, Andrew Foster of Harv Helen Collins. Wow. Okay. So waiting to the last minute in the calendar year is bad planning, pure and simple.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. And I mean, one of the next strategies we have is what's called tax loss harvesting. And again, this must be dealt with earlier in the month. And what tax loss harvesting basically says is that we all know if you have a stock portfolio that you got some stocks that do well and you got some that don't do so well. And one of the big things you can do is, you know, really look at your portfolio and see what kind of capital gains you have versus what kind of capital losses you have, and know that, you know, is there a way before the end of the year to make sure that you get a little bit more loss than gain? I mean, obviously, we all want our stocks to, you know, increase as much as possible, but the reality is that we're not all, we can't pick all winners, right? So, you know, one of the big strategies is really take a look at that portfolio statement and see what are my current gains and what are my current losses. You know, what is the net effect? Because that's how you deal with capital with capital losses and capital gains is capital losses offset capital gains to the extent that you have them. And then there's one other thing, Lockwood, which says that if your losses actually exceed your gains, you can use $3,000 of your loss to offset ordinary income, which could include your salary or wages or any other ordinary income that you may have. So, you know, one thing we're looking for at the end of the year is, you know, let's limit our capital gains, number one, by making sure that if we have any stocks that aren't doing too well, we get those sold and we have kind of a net effect of zero at the end of the day on our capital gains. But you also can go one step further, which is to say, I want to make sure my losses exceed my gains by $3,000 so I can take advantage of this $3,000 offset to ordinary income. So, you know, that is what we call going to the granular level and going stock by stock and seeing these effects. And it's something that I would really encourage our listeners to do when you get your November statement. You know, see where you are and then, you know, make that call to your broker and go ahead and get maybe some assets sold before the end of the year to make sure that, you know, that you plan. Because, again, this is calendar year, Lockwood. This isn't something that you can do in January and say, oh, I want to apply that to my 23, you know, return. That's not going to work. So it's really important that you, you know, that you take advantage of that if that's something that you want to do prior to the end of the year.
Andrew, and again, we're talking with Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins, Life and Taxes, here on the Talk Station. Andrew, real quick question. You, the $3,000, if my losses exceed my gains, and I'm able to take up to $3,000, if my losses are significantly greater, let's say $10,000 greater than my gains, and I've offset all of that, am I still limited just to $3,000 maximum to be reduced from my ordinary income?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah. So you're limited to that. Now the good news, Lockwood, is there's carryover losses. So you know, you didn't just, you know, basically lose that $7,000 in your hypothetical. Mm-hmm. That $7,000 can be carried over to next year, and if you have a really good year, you know, go gangbusters, you know, then that $7,000 will be there to offset your capital gains. In the event that, you know, you kind of just break even again, well, you use $3,000 of the $7,000 to offset your ordinary income again, and, you know, you've got another $4,000 to carry over to 2025. So yes, you're limited to three, but the good news is they do allow you to carry it over.
And how long can you carry over losses? Is there a limit to a period of time?
Yeah, good question. There is a limit on that. So, you know, 7 years, typically your carryover loss rules, so you just got to be careful. You know, make sure that that you apply that, you know, as you move forward. So be careful carrying forward losses that are very significant. Let's talk a little bit, Lockwood, about, you know, kind of year-end charitable giving. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in the season of giving, and, you know, I think it's very important because I know a lot of our listeners are very interested in making sure that they fund their charitable interest. And make sure, you know, whether it's churches, Salvation Army, you know, local food bank, ASPCA, whatever it might be, whatever you want to do. You know, a lot of people at the end of the year want to help not only make their season bright with their family, but also want to help others, which is fantastic. And you also can get a tax benefit for that, as you know. If you contribute money to a qualified 501c3 organization, then you are able to deduct that gift from your taxes. There's one catch, mm-hmm. which is you must itemize your deductions in order to do so. Oh. So it's very, very important, because if you know, the standard deduction currently in 2023 is $13,850 for single filers, which means $27,700 for married individuals who file jointly. So, you know, you really need to be cognizant of the fact that we talked about it when President Trump passed the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. You know, by increasing the standard deduction to the level that he did, he made people where they, you know, there's a significant standard deduction where a lot of the charitable giving, you know, you don't get a benefit for it potentially, right, because you don't itemize your deductions because you just take the standard. So one of the strategies that we've had and we've talked about in the past is you know, kind of look for 1 year to plan on taking the standard deduction, mm-hmm. and then the next year, you know, kind of double up on your charitable gifts, and you can do that, and then ultimately, you know, itemize 1 year, standard the next year, kind of planning. That's one way to do it. You know, another way to do it is there are what's called donor advised funds.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of an enhanced planning tool, but basically what that means, Lockwood, is you're earmarking money to be used to charities, but they're only going to give that money away. Because, you know, a lot of people don't want to make sure that they're, hey, I want to give that same gift I give every year to, you know, the charity of my choice. And I hate the fact that I'd have to do it in 1 year and double up, because that just doesn't make much sense to me, and I don't like that. Well, donor advised fund's a way to do that, because basically it's saying you can give the money up front, and then that fund will ultimately fund over 2 years or 3 years or however many years you need to fund it. So interesting planning tool there that could be utilized to be able to take advantage of your charitable contribution for tax purposes. You know, one of the big things we talk about, Lockwood, is you know, again, when you make these charitable contributions, documentation,
right,
documentation. You know, we've talked about everybody loves to throw the dollar bills into the kettle, at the grocery store. But the problem with that is you know, tracking that is virtually impossible, you know, relative to gifting cash. So if, you know, you make a big gift or a large gift, you know, be cognizant that you want to have that documentation to back it up. You also want to get that statement from the charity, you know, telling you that no goods or services were exchanged for that gift, because that's important, because if it's over $250, you got to have it. And then if you make a sizable gift, like, you know, maybe gifting a car or a boat, or something similar to that, you know, you got to get that appraisal done relative to what that is. And remember, you're going to be bound by whatever that charitable organization sells that item for as your ultimate deductible amount. So there's just some rules there that you need to be aware of, you know, when you're making these types of gifting strategies to charities. But again, season of giving, and we encourage everyone to do it. It's just make sure you're minding your P's and Q's when you do.
Well, to help you do that, just remind the audience, Harvell and Collins, Andrew Foster here with us on Life and Taxes. It's an opportunity not only to give, but also to give to the point where you are not injured in the process. I think that's an important aspect of it. As he just mentioned a moment ago, documentation, those appraisal issues. We'll be talking about that, I'm sure, in the future. As always, to the folks that are listening, don't hesitate to call. 252 area code 726-9050. That's Harvell and Collins. And to Andrew Foster, thanks for your time this afternoon here on Life and Taxes.